Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
It right. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, liberals of all sorts, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and those of you who are waiting for the liberal Jesus to come back and make the Democratic Party function properly. You know, it's never going to be just right, is it? It's never going to be exactly like you want it to be. There's always going to be a little bit of a problem. It's just, you know, why can't someone just come back and make it all okay, Riley? Where's that guy?
He or she is on their way to elementary school now to sit in a classroom being bored to tears until 3 o'clock.
Well, there you go. See, there you go. That's where we got to start looking for our next presidential candidate. The next Democrat is, as Riley said, the next Democratic presidential nominee that will actually be able to do what is necessary for the Democratic Party is now in elementary school. So what we do between then and now...
We wait and try and make the best of things, I guess.
Man.
I don't know. How was the weekend, Mary?
Oh, my God, Riley. The weekend was good until it wasn't. You know what I mean? It builds like that. I did some comedy Friday night, and I was great. And I don't say that about myself, if you know me. I know some of you think that I'm sort of filled with myself. But when the mics go off, I cry. All right? So Friday night. Friday night.
Oh, Lord. What movie did you get that from?
I just made it up. Should it be in a movie?
It should be in a movie.
Oh, man, maybe we should call the documentary people. They can put it at the tail end of the film that's going to come out on March 31st on HBO.
Yeah, there you go.
It's called, Hey, Look at Mark and Randy. They're sad people. That's the subtitle of the Left of the Dial. Look at Mark and Randy Rhodes. They're sort of sad, aren't they? I'm so glad they're on the radio and not out in the general population draining people. But Friday night had great shows. And then for Saturday night, man, that just the other shoe dropped in the worst way. There's some nights, Mark, that are just magic as a performer. And then and then the next night, you're only as good as your last show. That's what they say. Because Saturday night, it was like, oh, my God. Not only do people not care about politics, I really think that they were sent there by some sort of strange extraterrestrial landing pod just to make me miserable. They just couldn't even, they had no idea how to be an audience. Any of them, all three. God forbid I blame myself, Riley.
Now, wait a minute. Was this at the same place that you were at on Friday night?
Yeah, sure it was.
It was.
There's something, you know, it was just weird. Friday was great.
Well, Saturdays is when you get the tourists. Saturdays is when you get people who get their heads bad, you know, 5 hours before they come see you.
And I tell you, man, I can't stand this thing where, you know, you start talking about politics and you criticize the president. There's still a few of these people out there, not as many as there used to be, but as soon as you say something negative about Bush, you get, boo. It's like, shut up. What are you, seven? Oh, my God, what an infant. I just can't. Bad. So I got a little of that, but I didn't let it bother me too much.
Well, you know, George W. Bush has perfected the art of making his supporters feel good about themselves. So when you criticize him, you're criticizing them because to some small extent, they think there's a little piece of him in them.
Absolutely follow that, and I think that, you know, on some level, you know, feeling good about themselves is one way to look at it. Feeling vindicated in their narrow points of view, I think, is also another
way. Well, that's exactly what it is. That defines it.
That defines feeling good about themselves?
Yeah!
I got to do more
of that.
Because
their lives are very, I mean, I hate to generalize about people, but these are folks with very narrow lives, narrow focuses, and they're able to take Bush's, you know, perception of success from the election forward.
Right.
And they apply it to themselves. They think it pertains to them. They think Bush really cares about them.
They are the perfect candidates to live comfortably in a fascistic state. And like last week, I hit this thing several times last week, the 14 elements of fascism. I hit this several times last week because I find it fascinating and excellent. But in my excitement, I was paraphrasing a sermon given by this guy at the Universalist Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin, Texas.
Yeah. Reverend Davidson Lohr.
Davidson Lohr, who was quoting somebody else who I didn't give credit to. I felt bad about it for about an hour. Because I did. I was like, how come no one caught me on that? Because right above it, it's this guy, Dr. Lawrence Britt, a political scientist, and we'll have a link to that on our site. But I'm still hung up on these 14 points, these 14 descriptive points, these 14 elements of fascism that this guy, Lawrence Britt, identified and that Davidson Lohr used in his sermon that we have a link to on the website and the conclusions that Davidson Lohr drew at the end. Because it's exactly the type of people that you're talking about, people that are willing to go along, that are willing to feel strength without ever questioning, you know, what that sense of self is built on.
Well, because Bush understands very clearly that lack of questioning benefits him politically, that he can basically say anything he wants to say about America's reasons for doing things or his administration's reasons for pursuing, for example, Social Security. Create a crisis, it's not a problem if you have people who believe that in trying to solve the crisis, they somehow directly benefit. And that's what Bush has perfected.
Right. And also, you know, I think, Riley, is what I'm realizing, and I realize it, you know, I don't know why I didn't realize it before, and I realized it before I took this job, certainly. Most people don't give a crap. They don't know anything. They don't know what Condoleezza Rice does. They don't know who John Negroponte is. They don't know that Porter Goss is uncomfortable and can't seem to get George Tenet off his screensaver. They don't know, they don't know the nuances of these things, and I do to some degree because I'm up, I'm reading it every day, you know, but I'm not great at speculating or envisioning a future, but most people are sort of like, ah, crap, I got to be at work. I hope the Starbucks line is too big. How come my iPod doesn't hook up to my car stereo right? When is my wife not going to do that anymore? We got to bring the dog to the vet. When am I going to have time to see my kid today? I mean, where do they have room to sit there and go, what did Condoleezza Rice's outfit mean? And what does her policy mean? And what is diplomacy? And who is in charge of Iraq? And what is, I mean, really, let's be honest. If they're taking, this is a polling mentality. This is a soundbite mentality where people watch TV, they watch polls, they're willing to say yes or no answers to things they don't really know about, and that's what dictates the ebb and flow of demographics in this country.
What we talk about is essentially inside baseball for a lot of people. People are concerned, and on the East Coast at 13 minutes past the hour, they're worried about whether or not their kids are going to get to school on time. Are they, do they have the mortgage note or the rent package for whoever.
Right.
These are the very basic, bare bones things. And when you get down to the working poor, it's like, do I have enough on my Metro card if you ride in New York City subway system? Do I have enough to get to work and home,
yeah,
and to have dinner,
yeah,
and to be able to pay the light bill?
All right. Well, let's broaden that. Do I have enough money to put gas in my car with gas prices going up?
Why?
Where are those questions? And now our trick is, the trick we got to do is we got to find the little Achilles heels in those simplicities and figure out how to make people look at it a little differently. That, you know, Bush is not a good guy. He doesn't care about them. His policies are compromising them economically. That, you know, they're being lied to about their status in the world. There is no ownership cult society. It is only a culture of debt. How do we convince them? That's our job, Riley, to find the little loopholes to the simplicity in life.
And we've also got to find our own way of making people who see the same things we do feel good about themselves. In other words, we can't just point out their problems. We have got to point to our solutions.
Wow, that's a tall order. Especially
it is, but it's not undoable.
Especially because of the fragmented nature of the left. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, you may be right about that, but you're wrong about all three of these other things, and I can prove to you why.
Okay, well, we'll do that after we finish taking action on the one thing I got right.
There you go. So let's take some action after this. Kalo's back. And I want to talk to you about, it's been over a month with no meat, buddy, and I haven't been gaining any weight, number two. And number three, I'll figure out what the third one is after the break. 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your vlog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Having Yeah, 19 past the hour, morning sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It is Monday. Monday. It is Monday. Man, I am like coming to. I am regrouping. I am refocusing, man.
You were busy over
man.
The weekend.
Yeah, busy. Beating myself up and doing some comedy. I had some good times. You know what I mean? I had a couple of good moments with my cats.
I had two really good moments.
All right, let's talk about that, Riley. You went to a reunion of your drum corps.
That's right, St. Rita's Brassman.
And it was out in the outback of Queens somewhere.
The outback of Queens. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and how
was
it?
At a traditional looking Irish pub. You know those places that got like five bars and three little side rooms and stuff. They're really set up like public houses
are
in the UK. It was that kind of place, and it was like full of people I hadn't seen, some of them in 25, 30
How many
years.
People are we talking?
A little over about maybe 110, 115.
Is everyone faring okay?
Yeah, everybody's doing well. Some people have passed on. Uh-huh. The guy who used to run the drum corps passed on about 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was just good to see. And the highlight of this was I ran into a guy by the name of Vito Terzo. Those of you who live in New York know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He was the guy who used to be in charge of media for the sanitation department here in New York.
Yeah.
So, now, you wouldn't think that the city sanitation department would have a media guy.
Hey, I'm part of the Vito Terzo fan club myself.
He walked up and introduced himself to me. I said, hey, I'm Vito with the garbage. Oh, wow. Great guy, though. Really great. And I had talked to him over the years because, you know, when I used to be on local radio, we used to do stuff with the sanitation. There was a strike or there was a problem. So, I had talked to the guy without ever having met him.
I'm so glad I had that moment where, like you said, those of you who live in New York would definitely know who Vito Terzo is. And in the back of my head, I'm like, I got no idea. And I live here. But I held out because I didn't want to look stupid. But you know what? I have no idea.
I do, but no. But, I mean, guys who've been around for a long time, they've always seen his name in the paper. Whenever there's been a sanitation strike, Vito Terzo was
the guy.
And his wife marched in the same drum corps I did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's why he was there. So it was really great to see. And it was great to see some people came up from the Carolinas and stuff. It was really a really, really enjoyable time. And then I had a birthday party for my daughter yesterday.
Oh, happy birthday, Vivica, last week. And
last week, but she had. Well, you know what, though?
What?
And this you'll appreciate this.
Yeah.
It was at a yoga center.
Starting the kids young, aren't they?
Hey, but you know what? You've got 15 kids in a room, and you don't hear a sound.
Were they having a good time?
Were enjoying themselves.
Were they doing yoga?
They were doing yoga.
That's
at one
hilarious.
Point, you know, they're all running around screaming, hollering and stuff, and the next thing you know, the entire place is quiet as a church house.
What happened to shoveling ice cream into your face at a place with sirens? Giant Sundays, mountain of ice cream, not the...
Well, we had that, too. We had an ice cream cake that we got.
Happy birthday.
Yep.
Wow. Boy, that's a pretty power-packed weekend. I just sat home and I'm reading Bruce Wagner's new book. He's going to be on in next week. He's one of my favorite authors. The guy's like one of the darkest dudes around. His domain is Hollywood. And I'm reading The Chrysanthemum Palace. I've read all his books, but this one, I don't know. There's something about his ability to satirize that city that just kills me. Listen, Mort Milfington, the Cardinal, is on vacation, so we want you to vote for your favorite Milfington comedy bit at morningsedition.com, and we'll play the winners. Today is Morning Remembrance, so go to morningsedition.com right now to pick your favorite Morning Remembrance, and we'll play the winner later in the show. We also want you to pick the best War on Brains for Wednesday and the best Rapture Watch for Friday. So that gives you a little something to do as we're about to enter the issues. Kayla, I wanted to say welcome back, and there's people missed you. They were asking, where's Kalo? Is there a problem? Where's Kalo?
Thanks, buddy. It's good to be back.
Yeah, there's only a couple people, but, you know, it's nice to know that some people care. There's one guy, you know, but...
Okay.
It was actually Larson under a different name on the blog. I'm kidding.
I figured that out.
No, man, I talked to you over the break.
Yeah, that was the time.
Yeah.
And I must say, you look great for your age.
Here we go.
But let me tell you something. I've been over a month off of meat in terms of chicken, pork, and beef.
Is it good?
Been eating a lot of fish, and like, despite what you think, I'm not gaining any weight.
No, dude, you look awesome.
Thank you.
For
thank
how
you.
Old you are.
Yeah, that's hilarious. You look good for 38 too.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Aren't you like 48?
All right, this is great. Yeah, I'm really sorry that you're not going to be able to ever sell that car now. Chris is trying
now
to.
You're hitting below the belt, man.
Chris is trying to pawn his girlfriend's problematic Honda off on me.
problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No such thing as a problematic Honda. You didn't know that?
No, he's looking for book value, right? So, right, I get this email. It's like, well, it didn't pass an emissions test in Boston, but we replaced the exhaust system. Oh, okay.
Hey,
so
I'm
this
honest.
Is a new. You're honest, but it's a relatively new car. It shouldn't have, you know, it might be. All right. What I'm saying is, when it comes down to like $2,500, I'll buy it. All right.
Well, that might be approaching really soon because a cement truck just barrels into my car on the street. Like, where does that happen? Only in Brooklyn, I'm thinking. Like, why is there a cement truck that is so out of control? It just barrels into my car and rips the bumper off.
Guess you're gonna have to change those pictures of it on the website that you're trying to sell the car.
Yeah,
on.
You know what? I'm keeping the car.
That's what it means.
Yeah,
you gotta keep the car.
It's an omen.
Hey, man, get some cash for it though, Caleb. Get the cement truck company to pay you cash.
Yeah.
You know, rather than mess around with their insurance, rather than ending up on Judge Judy, because I understand they're in deep denial right now. Get them to just fork over a little cash.
Yeah, I had a Honda. They're great cars. You know, I would buy it, but my wife seems to think that we're going to drive the Toyota I have out from out there. I might get a kick-around car. Maybe if I can spend $2,000 on a little car that I could just drive into the city on weekends, that'd be fun. But the only problem is then you got to, you know what? You know how much this interests people, you know, in Los Angeles? You want to know how much this interests them?
How much?
Nothing. Nothing. They don't care. Look, here's fascism. How's that for a segue? You know, I've been reading this thing all last week, and it just Living Under Fascism, this sermon by Davidson Lohr, and these are quoted from Dr. Lawrence Britt, a political scientist. If you go to our website, you can see it. And I want to lead this. I want to get into Syria from this place, Mark Riley.
Mm-hmm.
The 14 elements, the 14 defining factors of fascism, of a fascist state. One, powerful and continuing nationalism. Fascist regimes tend to make a constant use of patriotic mottos, slogans, symbols, songs, and other paraphernalia. Flags are seen everywhere, as are flag symbols on clothing and in public displays. Two, disdain for the recognition of human rights. Because of fear of enemies and the need for security, the people in fascist regimes are persuaded that human rights can be ignored in certain cases because of need. The people tend to look the other way or even approve of torture, summary executions, assassinations, long incarcerations of prisoners, etc. That sound familiar, Riley?
Mm-hmm.
Three, identification of enemies / scapegoats as a unifying cause. The people are rallied into a unifying patriotic frenzy over the need to eliminate a perceived common threat or foe. Racial, ethnic, or religious minorities, liberals, communists, socialists, terrorists, etc. We'll have more later in the show when we come back. Syria's are pulling out of Lebanon.
Yeah, but not fast enough for a certain president of the United States. We'll get to that and a whole lot more when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Hey, we're back. It's 34 past the hour. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Aha, Mark Riley.
Hi.
All right, buddy. So Ramon just came by, and he's all buffed up. I don't know what the hell that's about, but maybe it's because of this. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger made some choice comments at a bodybuilding event in Ohio yesterday. So this is Arnold's Palm Pilot for today. 6 a.m. Wake up. Must kill Sarah Connor. Wait. Focus. Must bathe my raisin-sized testicles. 8 a.m. Wage war on junk food in schools. Urge schools to replace junk food with milk, vegetables, and fruits. And by fruits, I don't mean girly men. Even I'm tired of this reference. 10 a.m. Wage war on steroids and bodybuilding. To convince the youth, mention the tragedy of my raisin-sized testicles. 11 a.m. Wage war on angry California nurses. Those chicks could use a little of the Braunschweiger, yeah? Yeah. 12:30 p.m. Wage war on Poland. Wait, I'm getting ahead of myself here. 2 p.m. Go to New York to raise money for campaign committees. Shake hands, paw breasts. Fondle buttocks, so forth, so on. 8 p.m. Wage war on Blockbuster. I will not rest until every copy of Last Action Hero is destroyed. Destroyed! There you go. How's that for you? Hey, I can't, I have to, I have to understand some things here, Riley.
Sure.
First of all, I have to understand. Now, I want you to put this into context for me historically, because my political awakening only happened a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the lowdown on what happened, if you could, in a few sentences. What was Syria doing in Lebanon? What's a brief history of the realities of Lebanon? Lebanon was broken apart after the war there.
Well, there was a civil war in Lebanon that lasted from approximately 1976 through 1990. During that time, Syria intervened in Lebanon and, in fact, has had troops there essentially since the civil war began. We now know, of course, because it's coming to light in recent media reports, that the United States has been pressuring Syria because, of course, it's been almost 15 years now since 1990, and there are still approximately 15,000 Syrian troops inside Lebanon. The Syrians will tell you that these troops are, in fact, peacekeepers, but there are a number of UN resolutions, the latest of which was last September, which calls on Syria to withdraw its troops from Lebanon. Now we see that Syria's President Bashar al-Assad has said, yes, we will begin a staged withdrawal. Now, what's interesting about this, Mark, there are two things that are interesting. One, Bush and Condoleezza Rice and the administration have been saying to Syria, you must not only withdraw your troops, but you must withdraw all your intelligence operatives and agents from Lebanon, because they believe that these intelligence people will continue to foment some form of discord within the country. So they don't just say, withdraw the troops. They say withdraw the troops and the agents. Bush also, and this is just this past Friday, called on Syria to not begin a phased withdrawal of troops, but to withdraw all their troops ASAP. Assad has said, no, we're not going to do it that way. What we're going to do is stage the withdrawal so that we withdraw our troops to the east to a place called the Bekaa Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second part of the withdrawal is back to the Syrian-Lebanese border.
But apparently, from what I'm reading, too, is that, first of all, the assassination of the former Prime Minister Hariri. Which is a few weeks ago, was pretty suspect. I mean, some people were blaming Syrians. Other people don't know where it came from. I tend to suspect it was some sort of covert operation on behalf of an alignment between Syria and the United States. That's what I believe. Because, the more I'm hearing, the more that you just tell me, is that, maybe there was a deal cut. You take this guy out for whatever reason, and Syria, said they would pull out or pull back their troops. Is there any possibility of that?
It's a possibility. I don't know how likely it is. What has happened is that certainly the United States has used the pretext of Hariri's assassination to continue the calls and to, quote, step up the pressure on Syria to withdraw. And at this point, Assad has put forward an agreement that, or actually has decided to take action that roughly conforms to the Taif Accord, which was brokered back in 1989. This was brokered by the Arab states. This called for Syria to remove its troops back to the Lebanese border and for both countries, that is, to negotiate the withdrawal. The sticking point now, Mark, is that Assad says he will withdraw them to the border, but he will keep some of them in Lebanon.
So
as opposed to taking them all back across the border into Syria.
So now they're not really out then.
That's the position the United States is taking. That's the position that the Israelis are taking.
And it's not known that Lebanon will now, engage in a democratic process. It's not known, whether or not. I didn't realize that Syria, that Assad in Syria is not well liked or even, he's part of a minority tribe, apparently, and he's not, he doesn't have as much power as we all assumed. Is that true?
His father was the one with the power, Hafez al-Assad.
Yes.
Unfortunately, if you look at this from a storytelling standpoint, it does bear some eerie parallels to the Godfather saga in that Bashar Assad was not the first choice of his father to become president of the country. It was his other son, his older brother, Basil, who was killed in a car crash in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
he was the one that was supposed to be the heir apparent. Bashar, on the other hand, had, I believe, gone to London, studied there, and had become, I believe, a successful either doctor, dentist, something along those lines.
I think it was a dentist.
I believe it was a dentist.
Now, what I want to know is, I guess a conversation we need to have is that, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening in the Middle East. There's, you know, there's the partial pullout of Syria from Lebanon. There's a change in the Lebanese political situation. Obviously, in Iraq, there's been an election. You know, Mubarak in Egypt says that he's open to some democracy, you know, if and when he ever leaves.
Yes.
Whatever that means. You know, then you have, you know, the other issues in Saudi Arabia. And you have Bush at the helm right now, and things seem to be starting to shift in the Arab Crescent in towards, you know, elections anyways, which does not guarantee that a democracy will yield from that.
No, it does not.
And as you said, you know, last week, that, you know, Bush is going to try and take responsibility for all of this. But, you know, ultimately, this is not happening because of the example of Iraq, obviously.
I mean, no, it's not happening by that example. However, there's already one piece that I saw this morning that does speak to the idea that Democrats may have to give it up and say that Bush has done something right for all these things to have been taking place literally one right after the other. Now, I personally don't tend to agree with that line of thought. And there is still, Mark, the possibility that the withdrawal of Syrian troops could end up with the net result of reestablishing or reigniting hostilities within Lebanon. Remember, the Syrians didn't go there just because they wanted to take over the country. Lebanon was embroiled in a civil war. There's I don't know that there's a very real possibility, but you never know whether or not the withdrawal of Syrian troops will lead to, you know, a reignition of hostilities in the region. You never know.
And also, like, I guess it's important to remember here that, you know, that when George Bush went into Iraq, it wasn't to spread democracy. It was about weapons of mass destruction that weren't there. It was about consolidating, you know, whatever properties and resources Iraq had. It was about, you know, was it about anything other than spreading democracy? And apparently in Lebanon as well, they didn't even use you know, Iraq as an example. They used the Ukraine. And this is another great example that even 25 years later, after the fall of the Soviet Union, you know, how much democracy is there really in the Soviet Union? There are elections.
There are elections in various places. There's Putin. There's the whole thing with Yushchenko, who's now a U.S. ally. And people need to understand, and I guess this gets back to something we talked about in the previous half hour, Mark, that people, for what we're discussing now is inside baseball, but understand, America, this has a direct impact on each and every one of you. Because if any of these different situations blow up, it's going to be your kids that they're going to send over there to deal with it.
And also, just, you know, remember that just because some place has elections does not by any means mean that it's a democracy.
No, there is, you know, those two terms could well be seen as mutually exclusive. Now, you know, there are going to be elections coming up in Lebanon. And I think what the Bush administration is trying to push is the idea that the Syrians will not have a dramatic and tremendous impact on the conduct or the outcome of those particular elections. But, of course, you know, the Syrians can then sit back and say, well, gee, that's kind of like you saying you had no input or any kind of impact on the outcome of the Iraqi elections. You were there. But what is significant about what we see happening in Syria with the Syrian-Lebanese situation, Mark, is the introduction of the Saudis. The Saudis publicly called on the Syrians to get out of Lebanon. That's new. Now, maybe that's a net effect of, you know, Bush reeing up his ties with the House of Saud. Maybe he decided to pressure them to make that statement. But this is something the Saudi Arabians have not generally involved themselves in.
And where did the ex-Prime Minister Hariri make his fortune in construction business? Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, you're right. It wasn't in Damascus.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, what is that about? I mean, that stuff is some curious stuff to me. And, you know, they're always around these type of things where, you know, certainly our distance from it, you know, doesn't entitle us to, you know, the facts. But, you know, rarely do we get the facts on anything, you know, in terms of really making the picture come together. And one of those instances is certainly in the case of this Italian hostage, Giuliana Sgrena. Her negotiator, Nicola Calipari, was killed, and the entire car was, you know, blown apart by 400 rounds by American soldiers at a checkpoint. And, you know, she seems to think that it was intentional. And, you know, there's a lot of questions around this thing. And there's a lot of questions about, you know, what is, you know, punishable behavior and what is, you know, justified behavior, you know, in a war zone. It's 45 past the hour. It's Air America Radio. We'll cover this stuff in a minute.
You're listening to Morning Sedition,
the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. The facts, the fury, the funny Morning Sedition. Don't be stupid. It feels like thinking. That's a liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. Start taping, one, start taping Dan Rather newscasts for your kids. Tell them this is back when they had newscasters on TV. Newscasters. Two, reminder for March, celebrate Chronic Fatigue Awareness Month. But only if you're up to it. Okay? Three, refuse to support any minimum wage bill that does not also include a maximum wage. Okay? We've been blamed enough, people. Four, note to U.S. soldiers manning checkpoints in Iraq. Try spotting suicide bombers by looking for the classic signs of depression. Oh, look, he's lethargic. Ooh. Five, today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. Hope that little war we're about to have with Syria didn't get in the way of important Martha Stewart coverage. Hey, look, she's in her house and she's making cocoa. Wake up, sheeple. Martha's making Kool-Aid.
Ooh.
That's right, man. Hey, so, okay, let's transition now. We're going to talk about this Giuliana Sgrena, the Italian hostage that was released, and her hostage negotiator and savior, Nicola Calipari, was shot along with some other people in that car that was, you know, hit by about 400 rounds of American firepower at a checkpoint. Now, the Sgrena seems to think that it was intentional because Americans don't negotiate with insurgents. Now, I don't think that the people that were holding were insurgents. They were kidnappers in business of kidnapping. But nonetheless, you know, could she be right, or could it be that they are so on edge there in Iraq? Because this is where suicide bombers come in. This is where, you know, Americans get killed. This is where we had a guest named Jimmy Massey, who was actually involved in several of these shootings as a shooter. And I think if we listen to him, you get a real sense of what's happening at those checkpoints. Can we hear that?
After we had opened fire on this vehicle, we went over and pulled the occupants out. Three of them were fatally wounded. They were dying. We called the medics, and they came over and started doing resuscitation on them.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of the Iraqis that was in the car, he was unscathed. He walked up to me. He knew that obviously I was in some sort of command. He walked up to me and he said, "Why did you shoot us? You know, why did you kill my brother? We didn't do anything to you. We're not terrorists."
Was it because that you guys were just in such anxiety and so sure that there might be weapons or a bomb in every car that people were kind of trigger happy or what?
I think it was a combination of fatigue. Some of us have been up for 48 hours, and anxiety. You know, when you combine all of those things and the fog of war,
sure,
it has a way of playing on the psyche.
That was Jimmy Massey from an interview we did with him back in May. And, you know, it's this fog of war thing is coming up in a couple of areas. You know, it comes up a lot. You know, obviously, you know, what she's saying, Riley, that, you know, that she was targeted, you know, because the United States, you know, does not deal with negotiators, I think might be a little far-fetched. I think what you were talking about earlier, you know, that makes it questionable is how chaotic are things that, you know, that no one knew at this checkpoint that a hostage from our allies was just released and coming through the checkpoint. Where were the escorts? I mean, was it a setup, or is it just, you know, just that they're don't have any control there.
Well, you know, you make an important point here, Mark, because on the one hand, there is no evidence to support what Juliana Sagrina says, that that she was, in fact, the target of 400 rounds of American fire. There is nothing to support that from an evidentiary perspective, and there may never be. You never know. But the flip side of this is, and the part that really does have to be scrutinized, is they were 35 minutes after she was released. This was something that was worldwide news. You would think that somebody would have called a checkpoint and said, listen, these folks are coming through. They're going to be coming through at high speed. The woman's, you know, she's been, you know, kidnapped for a period of time. We just want to get her on a plane. Let this particular vehicle, and they could have described it very clearly, let it through. That did not happen. And now, of course,
stick a flag on it. Put a marker on it.
Do something that says,
This is, Italy has 3,000 troops here. I mean, you have to assume there was some communication between the two, unless it was some sort of conspiracy. But, you know, I think that, you know, I hate to say this as a conspiracy hobbyist, that this is just because they're disorganized and that they don't know what's going on. And these guys on their ground are freaked out that, you know, every other day there's, you know, dozens of people being blown up by car bombers. And they shoot at things.
Yeah, they do what they take the route that the military law allows. Now, Nicola Calipari, by the way, his family, his estate, whatever, will get nothing from the U.S. government. The U.S. government is under no legal obligation to pay him a dime. Or pay his family a dime.
Well, maybe there'll be a lawsuit. I mean, you know, apparently somebody paid about $1 million to these kidnappers who were probably going to try and sell her to insurgents, and that's the grounds for her case that she's making, is that she was going to be killed, for the United States policy of not ever negotiating with insurgents because they think that it encourages more kidnapping. It still doesn't make sense to me, right?
Well, see, that's the thing. The question here may well hinge on whether or not there was, in fact, money exchanged. At this point, the question of whether two things. One is the fact that Juliana Sagrina worked for Il Manifesto, which is, quote, and we know this because any report that we see about this has it in there, a left-wing, some people say communist publication. The other question is, did the Italian government pay money for her release? This will give the right-wing ideologues both in Italy and in the United States cover to attack her, to attack her newspaper, and to attack the fact that the Italians paid a ransom, which has nothing to do with her getting shot or nothing to do with Nicola Calipari getting killed. Calipari negotiated the release, for God's sake.
Yeah, and the thing is like, you know, we're communists to most right-wing people. You know, and the word communist is just such a buzzword. It's like, CNN's communist to some of these idiots.
Well, yeah, and that is exactly how they put together the framing to make her look not credible in any way.
Yeah, well, I'm not trying to do that. I think that, you know, someone has to be taken to task. And what is the fog of war? 866-303-2270. What is the slippery slope there where, you know, their behavior, soldiers' behavior, can be excused? And is there a conspiracy? What do you think? I'm going to talk about a sergeant when we come back who's in a pretty bad predicament.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
Fog of war thing.
Yeah, because it's deep when you think about it. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
There's a hot new technology that will transform your TV. A TV expansion system that reads your movements. Zavix Interactive Technology is here. Get off the couch and into your games. There's Zavix Tennis, Zavix Bowling, and Zavix Baseball. Perfect for the whole family. Roll an actual bowling ball, work up a sweat playing tennis, or swing an actual baseball bat. Zavix senses the speed and direction of your motion. The results are up to you. Go to xavix.com for details. And now, get a $30 mail-in rebate when you buy the Zavix board in one game. Zavix Game. Get off the couch and into the action.
In the game of life, what's in your credit report can make all the difference in the world.
The Smith family going for a home loan. The referees are reviewing their credit report.
Wouldn't you like to know what's in your credit report before you apply for credit? Now you can. Log on to freecreditreport.com and get your credit report instantly online for free.
Upon further review, the loan is approved.
Be prepared for the biggest games of your life. Log on to freecreditreport.com. That's freecreditreport.com.
Get out of debt and get on with your life. Agencies offering Care One credit counseling services can help. If you have $4,000, $6,000, $10,000 in credit card bills, find out how quickly your debt can be paid off. Some can save up to 57% in payments every month. Get out of debt and get on with your life. Call now for a consultation and debt analysis. Call for licensing details. That's Care One Credit Counseling Services. 1-800-695-9092. That's 1-800-695-9092.
Nelzer, what'd we get?
Bill, sale. We want $1 million and your W-2.
Sweet!
You really don't think we want $1 million?
No, the W-2.
Why?
Because now I can go to TurboTax.com. I just answer some simple questions. TurboTax fills out all the right forms and checks for errors and missed deductions.
Not that exciting.
Now, let me finish. Then with TurboTax, I can e-file and get my refund back in days.
Days?
Days.
Days?
Take a deep breath, give me the W-2, and go sit down.
Days.
TurboTax. Taxes made easy. Taxes done right.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The New York Times report this morning indicates U.S. military was ill-equipped no more than a month into the war in Iraq. The report cites an Army general in charge of providing protective equipment for American soldiers deliberately pulled the brakes on the purchase of more bulletproof vests. General Richard Cody was informed by supply chains at the time that combat troops already had all the armor they needed. Furthermore, some 50,000 other American soldiers not on the front lines were told that they could do without the equipment. But a barrage of sniper attacks and increased suicide bombings 4 months into the war prompted General Cody to do an about-face in a bid to save American lives. The report concludes that perhaps the Defense Department acted too late when it came to a decision to restock protective equipment. Whether American troops were ever adequately protected came to a head 2 months ago when Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld responded to a question from an Army National Guard member over his unit's need to cannibalize discarded equipment to protect themselves on the front line. Still no let-up in the violence in Iraq. More suicide bombings have been reported outside the capital in the war-torn Bakuba area. 16 people are known dead. Several others have suffered bullet wounds. The assaults included a car bomb, 3 roadside bombings, and a series of small arms attacks near a checkpoint. Deputy Prime Minister of Iraq says the ongoing violence in the country will not be a deterrent to plans to hold a meeting of the newly elected National Assembly within a 10-day period. The latest declaration comes some 5 weeks after elections in the country gave the appearance that hostility was waning. Deputy Prime Minister Barham Saleh said he's hoping politicians would end horse trading over the top posts soon so the National Assembly could meet for the first time. The Prime Minister's comments were in reference to what appears to be political wrangling over the effort to establish security while negotiate a date for U.S. troop withdrawal. Syrian troops will begin pulling back to Lebanese border following a meeting today on the country's leaders. Lebanese defense minister said yesterday that the earlier Syrian President Bashar Assad announced a 2-stage pullback of his forces to the Lebanese border but failed to address broad international demands that he completely withdraw the 15,000 troops after nearly 30 years in Lebanon. And President Bush visits a family support center in Pittsburgh today, joining his wife in a second-term campaign against gangs. The president has proposed a $150 million initiative to steer youngsters, especially boys, away from lives of violence and crime. Bush launched the plan in his State of the Union speech and put his first lady, a former elementary school teacher and librarian, in charge of that effort. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gill.
News brought to you by Xantrex 3, the most powerful diet pill in America. Xantrex 3, more weight loss, faster weight loss, energy to burn. Xantrex 3 at stores nationwide or log on to Xantrex3.com.
All your critical information is on your office PC. To work from home or while traveling, you have to copy everything to disk, email files to yourself, or sync up your laptop. What a hassle. Here's your solution. Go to MyPC, the easiest, most secure access solution on the market. With Go to MyPC, you can access your office PC from anywhere in the world, all over the internet. Log on to gotomypc.com and your desktop instantly appears just as if you were sitting in front of your office computer. Work with all your programs and files, check email, and access any network resource. All you need is internet access, no additional software, and it works automatically with firewalls. With GoToMyPC, anything you can do at your office PC, you can now do from, well, anywhere. You can try GoToMyPC free for 30 days with unlimited access. Visit www.gotomypc.com, click the radio listener link, and use promo code America. That's GoToMyPC.com. Radio listener link, promo America. Try GoToMyPC free today.
This is Merlin Olson. Have you called the NASE yet? The National Association for the Self-Employed is one of your best resources to obtain access to affordable health, dental, vision, and critical illness plans. The NASC also offers other health, business, and personal benefits. If you are self-employed or own a small business, do what I did. Call the National Association for the Self-Employed. Call today to find out how the NASC can be your best resource for affordable benefits.
Call the NASE now, 800-426-0690, 800-426-0690. Big solutions for small businesses. Insurance plans are underwritten by the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company. Association membership may not be required to obtain insurance, so call right now, 800-426-0690, 800-426-0690. Not available in all states.
In the game of life, what's in your credit report can make all the difference in the world.
The Smith family going for a home loan. The referees are reviewing their credit report.
Wouldn't you like to know what's in your credit report before you apply for credit? Now you can. Log on to freecreditreport.com and get your credit report instantly online for free.
Upon further review, the loan is approved.
Be prepared for the biggest games of your life. Log on to freecreditreport.com. That's freecreditreport.com.
Randy Rose.
Randy Guide.
Randy Guide.
Your guide to everything Randy while she's recovering.
Who will be guest hosting?
When will Randy call in with live updates?
Where do you send get well wishes and more?
It's all on the RandyRoadShow.com.
This Monday, it's Mike Malloy.
Tuesday, get a live update from the BS News team and the best of Randy Rose.
Thursday, with the Majority Report, Sam Cedar.
Randy Guide.
Randy Rose on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Oh, yeah.
We're taking calls about the fog of war, 866-303-2270. We're talking about the Italian hostage who was freed and now accusing the United States of, intentionally trying to assassinate her for being part of a payoff to, insurgents and kidnappers, which is policy that the United States military is not engaged in. The Bush administration will not engage with that. And she seems to think that it was an attempted assassination. And we just heard from a guest that we had on a few months ago, Jimmy Massey, who said that these checkpoints are insane, that this stuff happens. And Riley said earlier that where was her escort? Why was there no communication? Does that imply a conspiracy, or is that just an oversight? And there's another case here we've been looking at of Lieutenant Ilario Pantano, a Marine lieutenant who might be up for a murder rap.
Two counts of premeditated murder.
In the killing of two Iraqis that were unarmed. They were leaving a city that was full of insurgents. The car didn't stop. He approached a car. And what happens after that becomes unclear. There are two different points of view. There's the point of view of a fellow officer who they're calling a sort of disgruntled, bitter guy that wanted to see this guy go down. And there's his word. There's some weird circumstances where he was going to make a sign and put it on the car as sort of a joke example.
Yeah.
To other people, which is not a good sign. But, at what point do we excuse this stuff? When is it just war and when is it not just war? I mean, obviously in My Lai, you had a situation where people were executed. When is it an execution? When is it not an execution? When is it a triable offense? What's really going on over there? 866-303-2270. Would love to talk to veterans who have seen action, veterans who have thoughts on this, especially on the case of Lieutenant Ilario in the sense of being prosecuted for murder in a war zone that is full of guerrillas, not unlike Vietnam, only drier. Sid in Tampa, Florida, retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Marine Corps. How are you, Sid? Oh, wait, we're trying to get him. Hello, Sid.
Hey, Sid.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. What do you think?
Well, having been in Iraq, I can tell you that war is a place that is just absolutely confused. And it's these young men that fired on this car had imperfect information. They had the best information that they could have. There was a decision made. The rules of engagement allowed them to fire. They did what they believed was the right thing. It turned out to be the wrong thing. But these kids are just kids. They're 18, 19, 20 years old. They're operating on the best information that they have at the time. And, you know, things happen. And I hate to say that. I mean, it sounds so contrite and so, you know, it just sounds so weird to say.
Well, yeah.
Things happen.
It's pretty obvious.
Things do happen.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, who do you blame in this shit? I mean, where does the buck stop in terms of the proper communications? I mean, clearly this was...
Look, we sit in a... I am in a car right now on a cell phone. I'm talking, listening to you on a satellite radio. We have perfect information back here in the United States. Let me tell you, the last people, the absolute last people that understand what's going on are the kids on the ground.
Mm.
They don't have satellite radio. They don't have... You would think they do, but they don't. They have a shortwave radio. They're listening to the BBC to get their news, or they've set up Armed Forces Radio Television Network in Iraq, I understand. But, you know, that's where they're getting their news. They don't have what we have.
But, Sid,
I
understand in terms of how they get their news, but it would seem to me that their COs at some point would have gotten a communication from someone saying, look, they've just freed this hostage. These people are on their way to the airport. You know, if there had been some way to coordinate some kind of marking or a flag or something that would have let these kids' CO know that something was coming through on its way to the airport and not to fire on it.
Look. You would think that that's the case, but that is not the case. These people have minutes to make, to get that word down to the guy that's going to pull the trigger. That takes time. Let me tell you, if somebody says, hey, we're going to let the military know. Okay, so they let the military know. They let the division commander know or the brigade commander know. He's got to get on the radio and call the battalion commander. The battalion's got to get on the radio and call the company commander. The company commander's got to get on the radio and call the platoon commander. The platoon commander's got to get on the radio and call his squads and say, look, guys, there's a high-speed convoy heading out of town, and go fire on it.
So that, but that's like that could happen right after the shots are already fired.
Exactly.
All right.
Well, but, Sid, in your experience, Sid, how far along that chain do you think that message got? In other words, do you think that they were in process, or do you think there was no message ever sent at all?
I have no idea as to how or what happened. But
okay.
We are looking at this in through the lens of communications back here in the States.
That they don't have.
That's just not the case. Yeah, Iraq.
Well, that's a good point.
Thank you so much for your call, Sid. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate it. No, he makes a good point. I mean, he's saying that, look, you can't always figure, even under perfect circumstances, that those kids who were standing there with those rifles would have had the information.
And also you forget about the, you know, it's just like the bureaucracy you just described. I mean, for me, you know, for us, it's sort of like, hold on, let me get my cell phone, call the guy with the gun.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, don't shoot at that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but there's...
It's not
whole,
that simple.
Oh, boy. It's a sad truth.
We found out a lot about this at that, you know, in talking to and watching that Gunner Palace.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. Charlie in Brooklyn. How are you, Charlie?
Well, I'm a little disturbed. When I first heard the story, they didn't mention left-wing journalists. And then when I heard that after, I said, why are they bringing that in? And then I thought about that sometimes there are monsters in the fog. You have Eason Jordan saying that they target journalists, and then he quickly retracted it. And that photographer from, I think he was El Arabia, a Spanish guy, up on the roof of the hotel where all the journalists stay. So journalists who come back from there sometimes are saying that, you know, we think we're targets here, and it's just a really nasty thought if that's going on.
Yeah, no, I remember those stories, and there was some, you know, real belief on behalf of some journalists who were getting too close to certain types of action that the U.S. military didn't want them to see, and they felt that they were being targeted, especially Arabic journalists.
Absolutely.
Thanks for your call, Charlie. Interesting point.
Well, yeah. So there could be more to this. than Sugrena has said.
Well, okay, well, that's the other element of Sugrena's story, which, you know, which I didn't talk about, which is essentially that she was, you know, had conversations with these people that kidnapped her, and they basically said, you know, they're going to try and kill you because, you know, you've been with us.
Yeah. Now, I don't know whether, you know, insurgents blaming Americans for any potential violence is the best information out of all this, but certainly what she said was reasoned and parsed as a journalist. All she said, by the way, was, I am not ruling out the possibility that I was deliberately fired. She didn't say she had evidence. She didn't say, this is my first belief. What she's saying is, look, this is in the realm of the possible.
Sure. We've got a Vietnam vet on the phone we're going to talk to after the break. And he's got some reflections of his own. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the morning's edition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning's edition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Team past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sedition. Got some calls lined up. Let me get this out of the way. This is my dream from last night. It's getting weird. So I'm on the top of a mountain in front of a burning bush. Wow. A message from God. I kneel, awestruck. After a minute, the bush speaks. Mark. I say, yes, Lord. What is your will? It says, what's up, dog? Get off your knees, man. I stand up and get a whiff of the smoke. Apparently, I'm on Mount Cheech. The bush says, what can I do for you, man? I say, I'm here for the commandments. Did you get my email? The bush says, oh, right, right. Yeah, they're around here someplace, man. Hey, give me a second. Dude, are you hungry? I say, no thanks. I'll just have the commandments and split. After a while, the bush says, here they are, man. You want those in powder or tablets? So I go down the mountain with these two tablets. I reach a ledge and see all the people waiting for me down below. I say, people of Israel, I bring you the word from the mountaintop written in stone. So listen up, I'm only going to say this once. One, you don't have to run out of underwear before you do laundry. Two, don't scratch it, it might be infected. Three, wait a couple of days before calling her, you don't want to sound desperate. Four, water and aspirin before passing out should take the edge off of a hangover. Five, don't date sisters, bad idea, man. How many is that? All right, five, okay. Six, get in solid with the secretaries, they run everything. Seven, if you let one rip in public, cop to it. Don't blame the dog. Eight, don't lie unless the question is, do these make me look fat? Nine, no one likes a narc, all right? And 10, don't kill anybody. Everybody got that? All right, cool. Now, who's got the nachos? I'm dying up here. I woke up and my bed was filled with graven images.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, what can you do? All right, let's get back to these calls. We're going to talk to Joe in Utah. Wow, Joe, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Joe.
Good. Hey, guys. Appreciate your show. Love you. You keep me going on the road here, fellas.
Well,
okay.
Thanks.
So what's on your mind?
Well, you know, this whole thing from day one has been like a reoccurring nightmare. You know, I mean, we slaughtered over 2 to 3 million people with weapons of mass destruction in Vietnam and over a million in Cambodia. And, you know, it's just been an ongoing process that really is a result of we've suspended constitutional democracy. And that's really the key is we've really got to get a hold of what that's about. We've got to get people focused on that.
On an international level?
Well, no, on a national level, we're the problem. We're doing fine, you know. Well, not just fine. But the thing is, see, I ran for U.S. Senate last year, and I got 1% of the vote, and I did it all from my truck. I'm planning on running in 2006 with a ground game.
Okay.
I'm fighting for my country here. I'm not a politician, but, you know, these bastards ain't going to do it. They're not going to turn this into a fascist state. They're not going to suspend this dream, this opportunity, this wonderful opportunity that we have. You know, and I'm hoping to really reach in with the veterans and the military guys and say, guys, you know, you're a citizen first, and then you put on the uniform. Let's face it. We all made a pledge to preserve and protect the Constitution. from enemies, foreign and domestic, and right now it's domestic.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, in relation to what we were talking about at this checkpoint and the sort of fog of war, you know, and being that you were in Vietnam, I mean, you know, what do you think happened over there in terms of, you know,
who's responsible?
I serve on an aircraft carrier. I wasn't in combat, but the problem is what I just said. The reason you have this is because we can't stop it from happening. Once it gets rolling, it's just a steamroller, and this kind of crap's going to happen.
Okay,
there's no way to stop it, you know?
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, I think that there's a certain amount of truth in that, is that, you know, when you get to these, when once the momentum of this that happens and all this stuff starts breaking down, whether it's communications, you know, basic, you know, obviously basic morality, you know, what, you know, who's in charge, you know, in terms of, you know, any given platoon at any moment.
Well, the minute you start a war, you then open up the possibility of people, both troops and civilians, being killed by friendly fire, being killed accidentally, whatever. We've seen numbers of stories, Mark, since we started at this network, where soldiers themselves were killed by friendly fire.
No.
Now we see civilians. It is part of the wages of war within that context. So when you decide to engage in hostilities, you plan ahead that these kinds of things are going to happen. And believe me, as long as these numbers don't reach Defense Department estimates, nobody's got a problem with it, not as far as the defense establishment, not Rumsfeld.
Well, my big fear is that the American people will start detaching. I think they already have.
I think you're right.
Bill in Roxbury, Mass. What's going on, Bill?
Hey, Bill.
How you doing?
All right.
Yeah, I was in during the Korean conflict.
Wow. So what do you got? What's your take on what's going on?
Well, it's exactly what the other fellow from Vietnam said. It's the Bill of Rights, Constitution. There is none.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the Patriot Act 1 and Patriot Act 2, which is even worse.
Yes.
You should look at Patriot Act 2 because that's even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
And some of the things that Mr. Bush did, the so-called hook and horns that he said when he had his hand straight up in the air.
The satanic symbol.
Down, yeah. And the other finger across.
Yes.
And they mentioned over in Europe it was a salute to the serpent, as they call the two of them.
Yes.
If you get the point.
I do, yeah.
I don't have to. Do I have to say anymore?
So, no. Well, no. But as
not only that, I am a political advocate and had been for 40 years.
Okay. Now, in relation to what we were talking about in war and that you were in a conflict yourself, you know, what's your take on what happened over there with this Italian hostage?
Well, I was in the Marine Corps, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And so far I've heard that 83 have tried to commit suicide and 31 have completed it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the tops in anything.
Okay.
And if they're doing it, what do you think is going on?
Okay. What do you think is going on?
Well, that's my take.
Okay. I think the implication of that is...
And another thing, too, what I've been hearing is that there's certain drugs that they've been giving them to make them work more than what they should be.
Yeah, I've heard that, too.
You're talking about soldiers in the field?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
They used to give him Benzedrine, amphetamines. That was pretty common practice. But I know what he's saying is that if they can't live with themselves over there, and there's no sense of true morale in terms of feeling what they're doing is right or feeling that they're supported by the nation, you know, and they're just out there freelancing for a war that they don't believe in. I mean, obviously, you know, that could crumble people from the inside.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Ernie, listening to LIB in New Jersey. What's up, Ernie?
Hey, Ernie.
Yeah, you guys got to check your own blog. You need to see the list of articles that this woman has written about the U.S. operations over there.
Uh-huh.
So keep in mind, we had a joker over there who's basically a right-wing Christian talking about how he likes to kill Arabs over there. And
are you talking about Boykin?
No, it was the other guy.
The guy who had the little speech about Mattis. The guys who cowl, beat their women, and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Boykin was a guy that was he was a religious nut, but I think Mattis is the guy that said it's fun to kill some people. Thanks for your call, Ernie.
Yeah.
There is and Mattis,
there's more than one. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah, and Mattis was the guy that, this lieutenant that I'm talking about, Ilario Pantano. Apparently General Mattis had this slogan, no better friend, no worse enemy. That he kept repeating, and Pantano wrote that sign that he was going to put over the car with these two dead bodies in it that he chose to tear up, after the fact. Scary. I don't know. You know, this stuff is like, I just don't have any real concept of it. You know, I mean, it's hard to even imagine what's
going on over
there.
Very difficult to figure how you deal with this, particularly if you're a soldier with a rifle in your hand and you're on the ground dealing with it.
Okay, man. So we'll be back with our guy in Congress and find out what's going on in Congress.
Yeah.
Sam Rosenfeld.
Stay with us, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Having trouble.
Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
The show is Morning Sedition. The network is Air America Radio. How do you like that? So, folks, the entire extended Milpington family is taking a family vacation. Sorry. War correspondent Mort Milpington, Rapture Watch correspondent Milf Cardinal Milpington, and Morning Remembrance Greek correspondent Mort Mortensen, who is a cousin, are all enjoying their time off as we speak. So we're going to revisit their most respected reports. Our listeners are voting for their favorites on MorningSedition.com, and right now we present your favorite, Morning Remembrance, with Mort Mortensen.
As the people of the grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Jay Shulberg, ad agency executive. Jay Shulberg, an advertising executive who created famous slogans for corporate America, including the memorable Got Milk campaign, is dead after years of manipulating people to waste their savings on overpriced crap. Excuse me. A cousin to Bud Shulberg, who wrote the film On the Waterfront, Shulberg had always been an aspiring screenwriter. And until the very end, he never gave up on his dream of finding a producer for his heartfelt story of teen angst, titled, I Can't Believe I Ate the Whole Thing. Allergies.
Can
I have a tissue?
Yeah, I'll get you some tissue.
Yeah, thanks.
There you go, man.
Family members would not reveal the exact cause of death, except to say his last campaign slogan was, Got Gout? My eyes are tearing up. Listen, it's windy in here. Shut the window, will you? James Griffin, co-founder of the band Bread.
Oh.
This week, the music world received word that James Griffin, founding member of the soft rock group Bread, is toast. In a statement released today to hopeful fans, Griffin's manager said there was no truth to the rumor he's risen. But I guess that news is pretty stale by now.
Oh, no.
Got something in my eyes. Who's chopping onions? Never one to loaf. Griffin helped form Bread in 1968. After they released the hits Make It With You and Baby I'ma Want You, Bread was on a roll. Any way you sliced it, Bread was hot. There's a cop button over there. Bread made a lot of dough.
Oh, no.
Oh, is there a cat in here? Griffin had been in good health until last week when doctors labeled his condition as crummy.
Oh, no.
When loved ones discovered his body, witnesses say the former lead singer of Bread was crusty.
Oh, no.
Completely riddled with fungus.
Oh, man.
Nothing could be saved, not even the heels.
Oh.
You bring a ficus plant here?
No, man.
And Mark, you know I'm real sensitive about the pollen. One more paragraph.
Okay, buddy.
Griffin requested his body be interned at the family cemetery, sandwiched in between two graves. Evergreens, flowering plants, very sensitive. lot of suspended particulates in the air this season, right, Mark?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. It's winter, man.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
This has been this week's Morning Remembrance. Until next time, who's chopping onions?
You be all right?
Yeah, I'm okay, man. Thanks for holding my hand, Ernest.
Not a problem, buddy. You have a rough job. I understand. It's hard.
Well, these people mean something to me.
Yeah, I know. I know, man.
This is important.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll see you later, buddy. You going to be all right?
Yeah, somebody's chopping on you.
See you later.
Wow, remember that day when we had all that fun? Remember
yeah.
That day? How fun that was that day? Wow, that was a fun day. Did you hear the fun in our voices? Man, so much fun. We'll hear more of your favorites from the Milfington family throughout the week. You can go to morningsedition.com later today to cast your vote for the best War on Brains report from Mort Milfington. That's all happening. Do that. We've also got all kinds of new merchandise at morningsedition.com. Hats, things, shirts, mugs, the stuff. Right now, as usual, we're going to be talking to Sam Rosenfeld from the American Prospect, joining us from Washington, D.C. How are you, Sam?
Pretty good.
Hey, Sam.
Sam, so with this bankruptcy bill, okay, they're debating all these amendments, and it looks like, you know, it's probably going to go through, which is sad.
Right.
But tell me a little bit about the Kennedy and Santorum minimum wage bills. What's the difference, and why is Santorum's wage hike backhanded?
Right. Okay, this will be going on today. Debates over and floor votes over both amendments. Ted Kennedy's is pretty straightforward. You raise the minimum wage by $2.10 over the next 20 months, I think.
Uh-huh.
So that goes up to $7.25, and that's it. Rick Santorum is taking a piece of legislation that Mitch McConnell had pushed back when he was a senator. It would raise the minimum wage by $1.10 over 2 years, $6.25. It then has an just endless array of tax cuts and sort of weakening of labor laws as a kind of sugarcoating for business, including it would essentially make the 40-hour work week an 80-hour two-week work period where, say, you know, if you work 30 hours 1 week and then 50 hours the next week, you wouldn't get any overtime for that. So it all evens out numerically, but, of course, that just allows businesses to, you know, on busy weeks, give you much more work and then not give you work. It just gives them a lot more control over the time that you spend working. It would require states and localities to adopt a 100% tip credit so that waitresses and stuff, if they make just through tips, more than minimum wage, that's fine. There's, you know, localities will be barred from raising that any more than just a 100% tip credit.
Is it going to go through, these things?
Well, that's a good question. My guess would be that neither goes through.
Okay.
Santorum is pushing this to give cover to moderate Republicans who would otherwise feel, because minimum wage increase is very popular, and so they kind of have to shuck and jive and hide the fact that they don't want to pass it. So it gives cover to moderate Republicans so that they don't have to vote against Ted Kennedy's bill, and they can say, oh, I did vote for a minimum wage hike. But it's sort of egregious and filled with enough of this stuff that I don't think one hopes that Santorum's amendment itself will pass.
But now, Sam, and let's say for the sake of argument, Santorum's does pass. Over in the House, Tom DeLay says they have no interest in even taking up any kind of minimum wage legislation. Would this be a deal breaker even if Santorum's passed?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, these days, when things go to conference committee, there's like no predicting what Republicans will manage to strip out and then force down senators' throats after they'd already passed different provisions. This has happened time and time again, most egregiously in the Medicare bill. So it could be a case where if it does pass, it'll go to conference, and all of a sudden this minimum wage hike is gone. And, you know, within a day, the Senate's forced to vote on this conference committee that is completely different from something they had voted in the first place.
Now, is it possible that they could pass some of the tax breaks included in here and not pass the minimum wage part of the amendment?
Well, I mean, not in the actual process of voting for the amendment. The only way that would happen is, again, if once it goes to conference.
In conference, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the conference is where you know, Democrats have learned to not take anything for granted until they see something coming out of conference, because repeatedly Democratic leaders have been barred from participating in conference committee reports, and what comes out, sometimes they just add lots of stuff in the conference committee. So there's no telling. But overall, I think this is mainly just a diversionary tactic, a way to give cover to moderate Republicans.
Any chance, Sam, on another note, that the House Democrats' resolution on Jeff Gannon, James Guckert, will see the light of day at this point?
No.
in a word, huh?
In a word, yeah, because this is it's called a resolution of inquiry, and that goes to the relevant committee, and it has to pass the committee. And from what I can tell here, you know, it's all ranking members of all sorts of committees, meaning the Democratic leadership in the Rules Committee, Judiciary, Government Reform, Ways and Means. All these guys have passed this, have presented this resolution, but it's, I think it's going to the Judiciary Committee, which the head of that is Sensenbrenner of the Real ID Act fame.
Uh-oh.
Recently. And he's a tough guy, and I don't think he has any interest in pursuing this resolution, which is, you know, it's a perfectly valid resolution. Just wants some information about what ties Gannon has had in terms of in being involved in the Plame investigation and how he got access to the press briefings and everything. But
all right.
No, I wouldn't say anything's coming out of that.
Great, Sam. Thanks a lot for joining us, Sam Rosenfeld.
Appreciate it, Sam.
You take care. That's Sam Rosenfeld from the American Prospect. We'll talk to him again soon. It's 45 past the hour. We'll be back with the job listing after this on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Are you...
It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and, of course, all of you liberals and progressives and Democrats that are waiting for the political messiah to return, the one that will come back and do everything right, that will make the world just, that will make American politics work for the first time ever.
I want to thank the little people.
That's right. As Hunter S. Thompson said, democracy, the tribal myth, is how the Republicans look at it. Some sort of tribal myth. There are those of us that believe it can function properly, but very few of us think that it will function properly in the same way. That's the interesting thing. That it's everyone's got a different idea about how it's supposed to function and who it's supposed to serve and what it's supposed to do. It just amazes me that if Jesus came back and said, I will be president for a little while, and I'm not going to do it in a non-secular way. I'm going to do it in a perfectly liberal, secular way, I'm going to be Jesus, but without the religion. A lot of people would be like, oh, damn.
You know, why? He can't be the real Jesus. He's doing it without.
No, because Jesus, like, you know, not unlike a lot of liberals, has probably, you know, become more conservative over time.
I don't know, man. If you look at Jesus' fundamental tenets, you know, feeding people, you know, curing the sick, a lot of stuff that liberals could get on board with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the crucifixion thing is a separate issue, but if you look at what he actually did during his 32 years, he was very much, in my judgment, about, you know, freedom, justice, and equality.
Yes, Riley, I think it's all going to be all right.
There
I'm going
you go.
Crazy, man. Mondays, I'm like, my brain is skidding all over the place. I can't even keep it straight in my head. I'm so full of bile for some things and so full of sadness for others and then so full of happiness just because I'm awake. And also, I'm not iPodded yet. I'm happy about that.
You should get a round of applause for not being iPodded yet.
I'm getting some support around that. But then I read our emails and some guy's like, how do I download your show into my iPod? I can't listen to it otherwise. And I think that guy should have one. I probably can. What if I get the little one, Kalo? What's the little?
Forget it. The random one?
The one that? No, the one that you.
The shuffle play one?
The mini.
The mini that you can wear on your arm.
No, that's a big mistake.
It is.
Yeah, don't. Even
how many does that hold? Like 3,000?
I don't know, like 10 maybe.
10?
Ten.
That's
yeah.
not enough.
Your 10 favorite songs.
iPod. iGod. I am the owner of my universe. Let's do the job listing. Here we go. We know a lot of people out there are out of work. Oh, you know what? I forgot something. But I'll get back to it. I just want to talk about those 14 points of fascism that I was talking about all last week, that I was Davidson Lohr, the universalist, Unitarian Universalist out of Austin. The sermon that he wrote was drawing from another guy, this guy Britt, who wrote these 14 elements of fascism. I kept quoting him as being Davidson Lohr's because I was so excited to have them, but it turns out they're actually they were put together and brought in to his sermon by another guy, and he actually you know has the link to it on the sermon, but I chose to overlook that. But that's there. We'll get to that later if we can, if not tomorrow. But let's do this now. We know a lot of people out there are out of work and spent your Sunday leafing through the want ads or monster.com. We want to help be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So here is our Morning Sedition Monday job listing. Park City, Kansas has just fired an employee who failed to show up for work after being arrested and charged with the BTK serial killings. So Park City is now looking for a new municipal code compliance supervisor. In this position, you will be responsible for enforcing local ordinance without, and this cannot be stressed too strongly, without binding, torturing, or killing local residents. Duties include making sure homeowners have proper window screens and approved garbage receptacles and maintain their lawns according to standards. All of this must be accomplished without brutally slaying the homeowners and their families. Okay? Without. The ideal candidate will be able to effectively interact with both city officials and ordinary citizens and still not tie them up with a nylon cord, strangle, or ejaculate upon them. This position includes health and dental coverage, 401k, and paid vacation time. Please, don't kill anybody. Please. Is that wrong?
Thou shalt not kill? No, it's one of the commandments. I think it's pretty much right.
Yeah. God. Here we go, Riley. So Porter Goss is now claiming that whatever he said last week about not being able to handle his job or being overwhelmed was taken out of context. What he was really saying...
He was just joking.
...is, I like to be overwhelmed. Poor guy last week was like, how do I work a mouse? What is this? You click here? Oh, why can't I get George Tenet's family off my screensaver? Could the intern come in here? Call my kid. He knows how to work these computer things. Is this voicemail? What do I push for voicemail? I can't do this job.
Listen, Porter Goss is now saying, his spokespeople, his people, are starting to say that he was trying to use self-deprecation and folksy anecdotes to explain to the audience how full his plate is. This was a speech at the Ronald Reagan Library last week, and in that speech, he was quoted by the Associated Press as saying, the jobs that I'm being asked to do, the five hats that I wear, are too much for this mortal. I'm a little amazed at the workload, unquote.
It's a folksy antidote trying to say how bitter he is that he got screwed out of the big job by John Negroponte, and now he doesn't know if he really wants to do this anymore because why can't I be the guy who talks to the president every day? I've been doing it for a few weeks.
You know what I love about this? They're saying now, Goss's people are saying, that he was actually using this self-deprecating humor to show how thrilled he was at the new template of the intelligence community, this new structure that they put in place where he now has a boss, John Negroponte, whose job it is, I think, depending on how you listen to Bush, to give the daily briefings that used to be Goss's gig. So why would he be complaining? He's shedding load here.
Yeah, I think he's complaining because he doesn't get to be the big guy on campus. He doesn't get to be the guy that's really in charge of the whole kit and caboodle. He's now just in charge of information manufacturing plant, a biased information manufacturing plant. You know, the CIA is now, his job is basically to wrangle a bunch of bitter employees and also try to squeeze out some information that can be used for Bush, as propaganda. Whereas Negroponte gets the big job of actually overseeing the real intelligence.
Really
being the minister of evil information.
Evil information and espionage. Remember that one of the things that intelligence officers do is espionage. Mm-hmm. We all know how that is. Now, Porter Goss is in a situation. I remember that he came into the CIA and alienated a lot of people, brought in his own folks, and they started telling people how they should do their jobs. So there were people at the agency already that weren't all that happy, were not all that pleased with him. Some of those same people are now saying that this I'm overwhelmed thing really is about Porter Goss's mindset, and that maybe he shouldn't be in this particular job.
It's a cry for help, is what they're saying. It's a sad cry for help by the CIA head. He's like we were saying before, the CIA is not what it used to be. It's really been demoted, and I think a lot of the guys who were in there earlier who believed that it had integrity, like our friend Bob Baer, like Schuer, the guy who wrote Imperial Hubris.
Yeah,
these guys are pissed off that that the CIA has been taken down a notch, and now all of it's being moved into the State Department.
Well, State Department and Defense Department. Remember that Rumsfeld still controls 32 out of the $40 billion that's spent on intelligence.
Well, he's got his own military intelligence unit right within the Pentagon there, right?
The DIA.
The DIA.
He's got a serious intelligence apparatus of his own, and he controls the purse strings to some of Porter Goss's money as well.
Oh,
but, Robert Gates, who used to be CIA director from 91 to 93, is taking issue with Goss's I'm overwhelmed sort of thing. He's essentially saying, while being DCI, that's Director of Central Intelligence, certainly kept me busy, I never felt overwhelmed by the job. Now, interestingly enough, Robert Gates, former CIA boss, is now the president of Texas A&M University. That's fascinating to me because, remember, that was one place where they were going to do a lot of the intelligence homeland. They were going to set up a whole thing at Texas A&M.
Well, I'm sure there's no coincidence there, Mark.
I don't know.
You know, sure.
Serendipity? I don't know.
I doubt it. All these guys are connected. That's where they're going to do the next PSYOPs program is right there at Texas A&M, and they're going to create a generation of drones.
They may have already succeeded at that, and some of them are working in government, but that's a whole other story
day. Well, we'll get that. We're going to come back and talk about the sort of ongoing policy out of this administration, the adapt-or-die policy, how the Bush administration is putting it to the poor after this. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on the air and online. MorningTradition.com, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Plodding through a Monday morning on Morning Sedition here on the Air America Radio Network. My God, it's difficult sometimes. I'm going nuts. Maybe I need medicine. I don't know. Maybe I need medicine.
No, you don't need
it. You ever just sit on the train and wonder what it would be like if someone just came up and blew your head off? You ever do that? Maybe I need an iPod. I got my head in the wrong place, man. I got my head in the wrong place. I see him start yelling at
my
cat.
See, you haven't seen these kinds of... I've been on a subway, actually, once in the middle of the night where a guy walked up to a guy he absolutely did not know and punched him in the face.
Oh, my God. See? That's something you don't see coming if you're sitting there listening to the new U2 album.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful day. Boom! What happened? Hey! What's going on? I'm trying to listen to my music.
Yep.
I'm listening like, wait, you're screwing up my mix. Anyway.
You know what you did to me, man.
No, I don't even know you.
You know what you did to me, man.
No, you think I'm somebody else. I'm just
no, kidding. I know you, and I know what you, I know you know what you did to me.
Hey, you're screwing up my buzz here, man. I'm trying to just listen to my music and ride the train. Hey, look. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So I of course, bought a brand-new iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator that I have right here.
Uh-oh.
So let's crank it up and feed it some headlines, and we'll use the Brendan intro. Okay. All right, here we go. From the New York Times, U.S. checkpoints raise ire in Iraq. Okay. U.S. checkpoints raise ire in Iraq. Translation. Iraqi motorists complain of gridlock. Bullets. From Fox News, Vin Diesel's The Pacifier tops box office. Oh, my God. All right. Vin Diesel's The Pacifier tops box office. Translation. Millions lose 2 hours of their lives. From the Associated Press, Blake murder trial goes to jury. Blake murder trial goes to jury. Translation. Out of Spotlight, Beretta thanks Jacko for well-timed perv trial. There you go. Let's have the Brendan outro. Where is it? Brendan, man, he comes in here, he's doing the Pacino impression. He's such a level, even-keyed guy. Then all of a sudden, he's like blasting the Pacino out of nowhere. That's right. So maybe let's get into this. Let's get into the adapt or die strategy of the Republicans, the neocon death cults, Social Security. Where's that at? You seem to think, Mark Riley, that Bush is going to give in and the Democrats are going to buckle.
Yeah, I do. I think that eventually Bush is going to realize that any privatization scheme that involves a reduction of benefits is a non-starter. And that the only way he's going to be able to get this through, and by the way, not just through with the Democrats, but through with people in his own party who've got a problem with what he's proposing, is to say, well, you know what? We will make this a supplement. Mm-hmm. In other words, we will allow workers to voluntarily take a piece of their money and put it aside into some sort of investment account, but we will not count that money against their benefits. Now, there are a couple of problems right off the top with this particular concession, should he end up making it. Number one, then why overhaul the thing at all? Because
right.
You're not going to cut the amount of money that's coming out of the trust fund by allowing people to add benefits. The only way you can make that equation work is to cut the guaranteed benefit, which was at the heart of what he wanted to do in the first place.
But you're saying that, if I understand this correctly, if, you know, this thing, it's hard to wrap your brain around it, though, that people would, like, check a box on their paycheck to take a little more money out to put into a private fund. That's an additional thing. It's a personal choice.
It's a personal choice, just like there's a personal choice on your forms to check a dollar off a campaign contribution.
Right, okay.
Same
so,
kind of thing.
Right, so he would just be encouraging investment that way. But so then it doesn't really, it's not any different on some level, aside from you have the opportunity to invest money, you know, at the behest of the government, you know, as opposed to invest your own money.
Exactly.
So he's going to make it look like a victory when nothing really happens.
I can't imagine that he's going to be able to get anything else through. Well, I don't think that a cut in the guaranteed benefits is going to pay. It'll pass the House now. It'll pass the House. I don't know if it'll pass with a veto-proof number. Maybe it doesn't have to. But I don't think it's going to pass the Senate when people start saying, and you know, the Republicans are fighting now, polls that are saying 50-some-odd percent of the American people oppose the privatization scheme as currently constituted. And the Bush administration has ramped up the stakes in all this. They've got a war room.
Well, this is the thing I don't understand, Riley, is everybody knows, you know, anybody who's paid attention to any media outlet, that they're just sitting around. They're pretty honest about it. We're trying to figure out a way to BS the people efficiently enough for them to believe us. I mean, at what point do Americans not reward people for selling them properly? Do you understand? I know that this is a culture built on sales, but when you got a president who's building a war room, who's doing everything he can to try and, you know, rearrange the message so people will believe him, as opposed to making it understandable, which means that more people would say, what are you kidding? You know, I rely on that money. Why would I give you that money to invest? And people know that this is happening. Why wouldn't they just say, screw that, enough, it's over?
They're using smoke and mirrors. They've got this organization, Freedom Works, which was founded by Jack Kemp and Dick Armey, the former House GOP leader.
Yeah.
They are packing these town hall meetings that Bush is on. And actually, they are very much in favor of the privatization. So some of the people that you see asking these kind of off-the-cuff questions, allegedly, they're people that are essentially planted.
See that? They're making guckers out of everybody.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, this thing in Westfield the other day. Apparently, according to one report, as many as one-third of the people in that audience in Westfield, New Jersey, were in fact members of Freedom Works.
How do you live with yourself when you've been guckered by the Bush administration? Don't let them guckert you.
It's part and parcel of a strategy. Rick Santorum put out a memo saying, you know what, this Social Security plan, this privatization scheme is in trouble. When somebody as conservative as Santorum says that, it really is in trouble.
Yeah, don't let them guckert you.
No, please don't let them guckert you. We're going to come back. We've got the conspiracy guy. Is he calling us?
Well, maybe he will.
Well, maybe he will. Maybe he won't. We'll find out here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Are you getting...
past the hour. It's the longest Monday morning I've ever felt in my life. Air America Radio's Morning Tradition. I'm here with Mark Riley.
Yes.
We've been here since Saturday night.
Yes.
That's... I feel like I haven't slept in days. Oh, my God. It looks like we have a phone call from our only listener so deep in the mix that he needs a code name. It's our little buddy Pollux. Hello, Pollux.
Yeah, let me beat you to the punch, Maron.
Okay.
My name rhymes with bollocks, which is what the British call their gonads. Oh, and just the fact that I insist on the code name makes me look like a delusional idiot.
What makes you think I was going to say any of that stuff, Pollux? I would never call you delusional.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Would somebody who's deluded have my insight into what's really going on? Could any nut in the street connect the dots the way I do?
Oh, you're not just any nut, Pollux.
Don't think I didn't pick up on the sarcasm there, Maron. Lucky for you, I got important things to talk about.
All right.
Listen and learn.
Okay.
You hear that Paul Wolfowitz is going to be the head of the World Bank?
What? Oh, yeah, I did. I heard that idea mentioned. The current head of the World Bank denied it, though, right?
Yeah, right. I'll take that as a confirmation.
All right. So, wait. Now, wait. Let me just get this straight. Are you actually having some real insight here, Pollux? I mean, you know, that is pretty insightful.
Yeah? Are you surprised, Maron?
Yeah, I am.
Can I call you Mark, Maron? Wolfowitz is a guiding light and the architect behind the whole Iraq invasion. It was his baby to begin with.
Right, exactly. Things got messier than they expected, but basically he delivered Iraq's oil wealth up to the people who wanted it, right?
Yeah, and now they're giving him the keys of the bank. Literally.
Wow, man. Pollux, this time you've nailed it, buddy. Wolfowitz, at the head of the World Bank, would be a nightmare, dude.
That's right. Especially if he could really turn into a wolf.
All right, here we go.
It's called lycanthropy, Mark.
Uh-huh. Please call me Maron, Pollux.
Listen to me. Dr. Luis Figuera of Guadalajara has found a family of 32 people deep in the mountains of central Mexico. They're all covered with fur, and they exhibit unprovoked aggression and irrational behavior. There's stories like that all over the world. In Italy, werewolves are called Lupo Monero. In Russia, Bodarks. In Indonesia, they're called Lyaks.
Lyaks? Indonesia? Wait a minute, buddy. This does make sense.
It does?
Yeah. Wolfowitz was ambassador to Indonesia for 3 years. Oh. How could he have been there that long without getting bitten by a Lyak? I mean, come on, man. He's got the symptoms. Unprovoked aggression, irrational. What could be better description for Iraq? He even grooms himself with his own saliva, dude.
Holy crap!
I know. And then this man-beast is poised to take over the economic reins of civilization.
Oh, man, I gotta get out of here.
Oh, wow.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get back to him. I'm not sure what happened there. So, dude, let's continue talking about how the Bush administration is progressively screwing the poor there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But first, let's get to Adam. He's in Westfield, New Jersey. He was at the protest last week. We talked to him on the phone. He did some pretty good...
did some good journalism there,
improvisational
Adam.
Reporting. How are you, Adam?
Good morning.
What's going on, buddy?
Well, yeah, I was on the air with you guys on Saturday right before the rally. As the chief of police was really overreacting, wanted to tow a flatbed out of there. But I don't know, maybe from being on the air with you guys, they didn't tow it. And then after the rally, we all marched towards the armory and protested, and they had us blocked off about 2 to 3 blocks away. Then a bunch of us went around to the side of the armory, and it was at that point, towards the end of that protest, that an 18-year-old girl from Westfield and this kid that she tutors got arrested, and they didn't do anything. And they were, Emily Colvin is her name, she was thrown against the car, her face was slammed into the car.
Oh, man.
I talked to her the other day. I didn't see this, but she said her 7-year-old brother got hit in the back with one of those billy clubs.
A 7-year-old?
A 7-year-old, they wouldn't, well, maybe they
would. Anyway, there's a website that a woman out there has a video of it, and her brother put a website up, and there's a video of a little bit of this out on that website. And also, her court date is on the 23rd, if anyone wants to come out and support her in Westfield.
What's she charged with?
I guess disorderly conduct. I'm not exactly sure. But I know that Bush is going to 60 cities in 60 days, so I hope that everyone out in your listening audience that is going to be in a town where he is coming will get out there and let their voices be heard. This is ridiculous. It was there's video out there. There's pictures. It was they had the SWAT team. I mean, there must have been about 300 policemen out there.
You know what's incredible, Adam? He stacked the audience inside the armory on top of that. They all work for some organization that's been dedicated to his reelection and dedicated to his Social Security scheme.
Wow, what a surprise. can I give the website out?
Yeah.
Sure.
It's Seeds of Doubt, SEEDS of Doubt, oneword.com/distressedamerican/main.htm, and I put it out on your blog as well.
Okay, well, we'll put a link to it, and we'll check back in with you another time, Adam.
Right. Appreciate it, man. Bye.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so that's pretty heavy if they're hitting 7-year-olds, if that's true. It's like, you know, I mean, out of everybody there, not that hitting anybody is a good idea, and obviously it's a horrendous thing to do for a cop, especially if he doesn't have to, but yeah. To hit a kid, that's crazy.
Well, that's assault on a certain side. I mean, like, a 7-year-old, what, the kid had a rock in his hand or something? I mean, what in the world would you do that for?
I don't understand, man. I mean, it's like, it's awful. I mean, the symptoms and signs of fascism abound, my friend. But let's get into a little bit of the bankruptcy thing and the minimum wage thing, if we could, Riley.
Sure.
So how does, you know, Senator Kennedy's minimum wage idea is to jack it up a couple of bucks and
a couple
pretty
of bucks
quickly.
Over about 2 years. And the thing is, Ted Kennedy says his bill would assist about 7.3 million Americans in terms of how much their money would get raised. Rick Santorum's, Ted Kennedy says, would only help about 1.8 million workers while giving businesses a whole bunch of breaks, including the ability to deduct about 10 hours every 2 weeks worth of overtime. And you heard Sam Rosenfeld describe that before, Mark, where instead of doing things in 40-week increments, you do them in 80-week increments. So you work somebody 30 hours a week in on the one hand, and then 50 hours a week the second week. You don't have to pay them any overtime, even though they work 10 hours over 40 during that second week.
You know, it's just, it's brain-bending to me that between, you know, Medicaid cuts, all right, this bankruptcy legislation that they're putting through, if they are able to alter Social Security at all, these minimum wage plans, I mean, they are really sort of cutting off the lowest class of this country, the poorest people, and just dangling them. I mean, if all that stuff gets pushed through in any form, and obviously the bankruptcy legislation is going to go through, right?
Yes.
The Medicaid cuts are already taking place in a lot of red states, by the way. You know, and they're, it's just like it's an adapt or die policy. And then I read this thing by Sidney Blumenthal, which there's something really ironic and screwed up about all this. And he's referring specifically about Social Security in terms of if they get it through, that the gamble would pay off in closely tying to the Republican Party, the Wall Street banks that would finance, I'm quoting from Sidney, that would finance the transition costs of privatization and the bond houses and stock firms that would be flush with new investments. But most important, it would unravel the fact and idea of government insurance programs providing for the needs of a people as a whole. Once Social Security was cut into pieces, the Democrats would be left defensively representing the least politically powerful and the most vulnerable, literally the lame and the halt, the poor single mothers and minorities. The Democrats would be drawn and quartered on the wheel of broken entitlements. And in a sense, you know, what he's saying here is there is a glimmer of strange hope in my eyes, Riley, is that if the distinction between rich and poor becomes so extreme because of the policies of this administration, it will become very clear who, where, and how to reengage democratic principles.
Either that or there'll be a revolution like there was in France. I mean, when you have the kind of income gaps, when you see that the gaps between what CEOs make and what their workers make, has been blowing up over the last decade. When you start understanding how the rich are getting richer while the poor are getting poor, you're right. You will have a built-in Democratic constituency. The question then becomes, and remember that Bush is playing on the possibility and on the likelihood, in fact, that the more people he ties into the speculative part of the financial economy, in other words, the stock markets, the bond markets, the mutual funds, then the more these folks will be bound to the Republican Party, because that party is the party that represents the people that are in charge of their money.
But how long does that last before the, you know, things start backfiring? I mean, you can't have regular working people putting their money intentionally into some sort of Enron scam or into the stock market. I mean, he's encouraging them, like you said, by making them feel better about themselves to be part of it. But really, in reality, I mean, how long is it really going to take for them to realize they've been suckered, they've been duped?
One crash is what it'll take. But right. See, Bush is opting on the idea that or is actually backing the idea that the stock market, even with all its crashes, has continued to appreciate in value over the long term.
God, there really is a sucker born every minute, and it's just surprising that there are so many damn, you know, suckers, you know. I mean, I'm sort of a sucker myself, but I just don't understand why people who are economically strapped, you know, unless they're in some sort of denial, would buy into any of this crap.
Because, see, it's not just Bush isn't really aiming this at the economically strapped as a whole. What he is doing, though, is trying to create a society where there are more and more and more investors, more people that are willing to put a piece of their money into some sort of risk proposition that could make them money in the long run. And if you look at how the tax breaks that Bush has proposed are structured, it tends to reward investors, not workers. That's what all of this, that's what the end game is here.
Yeah, the workers, that, you know, this new ownership society for investors might be one thing, but for workers it's a culture of debt, which is where we get into bankruptcy and where we get into these sort of borderline criminal behavior, if not outright criminal behavior, credit card penalties and credit card companies. Credit card companies, and by the way, Joe Biden did vote for this bankruptcy legislation. I mean, he did, you know, he's one of the Democrats that, because he's from Delaware,
No, he didn't vote for it. He wasn't there. He took the day off that day.
He took the day off.
Tom Carper, colleague from Delaware, voted in favor.
All right, so Biden just, well, that's interesting.
Biden
because,
just disappeared,
you know, well,
that
Biden's
day.
Thinking ahead. Well, that makes me feel a little better about some of the stuff we were talking about last week, because I happen to like Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. But disappearing is not voting against it, but it's not voting for it either. These guys are kind of clever. But it just seems to me that with the, you know, that apparently, with this bankruptcy legislation, the credit card companies don't even need this legislation. They already get the basic benefits of the legislation because of these penalties that they've been legally allowed to attach to ongoing debt. I mean, when I'm reading this article about the type of money that people had, like this guy who tried for 6 years to pay off a $1,900 balance on her this woman on her Discover card, all right, sent the credit company total to the credit card total to $3,492 in monthly payments from 97 to 2003, yet her balance grew to $5,564. I mean, with these penalties, even if you have like a $200 debt that you don't pay, I mean, within you know, 2 or 3 years, it could be thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And they're not willing to forgive anybody.
And it will take years for people to pay off all this debt. Now, think about this for a minute, folks. Those of you who have got that plastic sticking in your wallets, think about this. Late fees range in many cases from $25 to $50. Let's say you're late half the time. Let's say you got monthly payments, you're late 6 months of the time. Okay, and you're at the high end of that. That's an extra $300 a year that you're putting into the pockets of the credit card companies. Multiply that times the average number of people who pay late in a six-month period, and you start to understand the dimensions of the money that these people are making without, and this has nothing to do with people paying off debts. It has to do with late fees that they are legally able to do.
They're draining them. They're just draining people. They're killing people. It's unbelievable. 47 past the hour, Air America Radio. We'll come back and we're going to talk about, I guess we'll close up with some more of those descriptions of fascist states and try to wrap things up. It's 47 past the hour. We'll be back in a second.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil.
In 3 hours or less,
Air America Radio.
Yay, it's Monday, 52 past the hour. Mark Mariner with Mark Riley.
Yep.
On Morning Sedition. If you only heard on the break, man, I'm so full of it today, man. I feel bad and I want someone to pay. I want to make somebody cry.
By the way, that story that we
before I do. I think it's going to be me.
That story that we did about the credit card and the late fees originally appeared in the Washington Post, and we are going to get back to it.
We got
to
talk about this tomorrow, man, because like this is really hitting people where it hurts, and this is one of those things that people should realize is that, you know, this administration aligns itself with these credit card companies that do nothing but rob people of everything they have, and this bankruptcy legislation denies people the ability to put their lives back together, you know, after they get screwed by credit card companies who are draining them of everything with absolutely no empathy whatsoever. I mean, if somebody owes $200 and they allow that to fester up to like to $5,000 without even like in the legislation, they rejected an amendment that would enable the credit card companies, that would force the credit card companies to put on there what the minimum payment they could make that would eventually pay off their debt and over what amount of time.
Yeah.
Because that would be too truthful. That wouldn't enable the person to actually start to lose their lives to the credit card company.
It's incredible. I mean, 30% they're allowed to charge. Now, back in the day, they used to call that VIG.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's 30%, and that's after you sign up. That's in penalties. That's like a small print kind of thing.
Well, that's the interest. That's what they can get away with charging you in interest.
If you carry the debt.
On the dollar. Yeah, absolutely. Make the minimum payment.
And then they say things like, well, we're just trying to get people to pay their debt. It's ridiculous. They are not. They want more than anything for people to get into hock with them, so they are draining their bank accounts. All right, so now we're going to talk, obviously, more about that this week because I'm about to have an aneurysm. Like, over the last week, I was talking about the 14, you know, descriptions of fascist states, identifying characteristics of fascism. I credit it to Davidson Lohr, the Unitarian Universalist preacher out of Austin, but he was actually he was quoting Dr. Lawrence Britt, a political scientist, in his sermon, which they're both available at morningsedition.com. I did four of them earlier. I just want to read a couple other ones let's read, you know, what I want to read to close out is I want to read Davidson Lohr's, you know, what his list of things that he believes will, you know, enable the fascist state to exist in this country. There's several of them, but here's a few. The theft of all Social Security funds to be transferred to those who control money, and the increasing destitution of all those dependent on Social Security and social welfare programs. 2, rising numbers of uninsured people in this country that already have the highest percentage of citizens without health insurance in the developed world. That's our country, Riley. 3, increased loss of funding for public education, combined with increased support for vouchers, urging Americans to entrust their children's education to Christian schools. I never thought of it that way. Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I guess I'm a dummy. More restrictions. 4, and more restrictions on civil liberties as America is turned into the police state necessary for fascism to work. 5, withdrawal of virtually all funding for national public radio and public broadcasting. At their best, these media sometimes encourage critical questioning, so they're correctly seen as enemies of the state's official stories. I mean, the list goes on and on. I'm just fascinated with this thing. I guess I'll get more into it tomorrow because we don't want it to be too big of a bummer at the end of our show here on Monday. It's going to be okay, folks.
Yeah.
You know, there's still good food to be had. People have pets. You know, maybe it'll be a nice day at work. You know, kids are fun.
You know, we're going to do though. We're going to get some people to come in here one day. We're going to get some credit experts to show people how they can get around this foolishness.
Really?
But you can. Yes.
Really?
You absolutely can. And I know some of the people.
Are you going to get them to come in?
I'm going to get them to come
in. This is your accountant, isn't it?
No, it's not my accountant, man. No. Actually, it's an old friend who has one of these counseling services that shows you. He's one of the original guys. He's been around for 30 years. And he will show you how you can pay your way out of these things simply by demanding that the card companies put a certain amount on the on the principal rather than the interest.
All right, well, so we're going to have that guy.
Yeah, we'll have him on.
All right, well, let's give him a call. Well, we could call him or else he could come in.
He can come in.
All right, this is a liberal agenda from the Streisand compound to end this day today, for us anyways, Monday. Just starting for you, I'm sure. 1, start taping Dan Rather newscasts for your kids. Tell them this is back when they had newscasters on TV. 2, reminder for March, celebrate Chronic Fatigue Awareness Month, but only if you're up to it, okay? Don't push it. 3, refuse to support any minimum wage bill that does not also include a maximum wage. We've been blamed enough, people. 4. Note to U.S. soldiers manning checkpoints in Iraq. Try spotting suicide bombers by looking for the classic signs of depression. And 5. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Hope that little war about to have with Syria didn't get in the way of important Martha Stewart coverage. Hey, look, she's in her house and she's making cocoa. Wake up, sheeple. Martha's making Kool-Aid. Wake up, man. What do we got? What do we got tomorrow?
Well,
man?
Tomorrow we're going to talk about the sumo subculture in Jeff Boulware.
Yeah. Jeff, he's hilarious. Well, he covers weird stuff. We'll talk to him about a lot of stuff.
We'll talk to him about a lot of stuff. He's a great storyteller. That's tomorrow. See you tomorrow, Maren.
All right, Riley.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Cholesterol.